and the history of the conflict in Northern Ireland. Now, that's not an easy subject. Yeah? Many people have written many books, and many people have been arguing for at least 100 years about this subject. But let me give you some of the basic information then. Yeah. So, after the War of Independence, 1919 to 1921, this very original solution was found. Let's divide Ireland into two. The northern six counties remain part of the United Kingdom, attached to England. The other 26 counties in the south become independent, but in 1921 they do not become a republic. They become an independent dominion, like New Zealand, Australia, Canada. They are independent, but they have the same queen, or the same king at the time. So, when Northern Ireland was invented in 1921, remember that it was not a traditional divide. Northern Ireland is not a traditional region at all. It is an artificial line decided in 1921. One of the most important reasons was the British government wanted a Protestant majority in Northern Ireland. And for many years, the government of Northern Ireland will say, we want a Protestant parliament for a Protestant country. Yeah? So for many, many years, the Northern Ireland government did not want to be a mixed Catholic and Protestant together government, but the, I quote, a Protestant government for a Protestant nation. Now, of course, the history of division between Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland is very, very old. The Protestants came originally to Ireland as colonists, as part of a colonial campaign. Of course, today, the Protestants in Northern Ireland are not colonialists. They are workers, middle-class people, all sorts of ordinary people. But sometimes, politically, with their ideas, it can still be a colonial idea. For example, the leaders of the Protestant political parties have sometimes been very open about very negative ideas about Catholic people. One of the leading politicians described the Pope as the enemy of God. Un des dirigeants protestants dit, le pape c'est l'ennemi de Dieu, c'est la campagne de Satan sur terre. So very, very strong. This is a politician, political leader, not a religious leader, a political leader. Okay, so at the beginning, then there was the colonization of Ireland in the 16th and 17th century. Oliver Cromwell occupying Ireland, and Britain became a Protestant country in different ways. In England, you had one Protestantism, and in Scotland, another one, Presbyterianism. But Ireland remained a Catholic country and an agricultural country. And when the Industrial Revolution came to England, it was very slow in Ireland. And most of the industry was in the north. There was a priority given by the British government to the Protestant parts of the country. Yeah, that's where the money went. Yeah. The colonization was in many ways a typical colonization. It was not different from, you know, Algeria or Kenya or the Caribbean, etc. The land was owned by Protestants from England or from Scotland. So there was an important social and economic oppression. The peasants who worked on the land were very poor native Irish. Their diets relied mostly on potatoes, whereas the cereals which they sometimes produced were exported to Britain. So again, not a lot of investment in agriculture, therefore very low productivity of agriculture. The good crops, the wheat and so on, the diversified crops were exported, and the local people ate the cheapest food, potato. Absolutely, there's nothing surprising at all. And of course, I already mentioned to you the great famine of 1846 to 1849, when at least 1 million people died, and another 1 million people had to emigrate. Two reasons for the famine. First of all, the potato disease, which was an accident, but because potatoes was almost everything people ate, then it caused a lot of problems. If people had eaten a lot of different things, then no potatoes would not be such a big problem. Famine is usually a political phenomenon and not just a natural phenomenon. Perhaps I mentioned the population of Ireland in 1850 has declined since 1850, got up again, but even today there are not as many people in Ireland as there were before the famine. So, devastating effect. So the colonization, first of all, of course, produced oppression of an economic and social sort. Secondly, here we have a monument in Dublin to commemorate the famine. You can see that there are people carrying children. They're very thin, they haven't eaten very much. And this is a monument to commemorate the famine. Even today, Irish people really do not forget the famine. One of the reasons was that during the famine, a lot of food was exported to England behind the protection of British soldiers. Yeah, it was difficult to understand. Here is another memorial to the famine in Boston, in Massachusetts. There are many more memorials around the world to the Irish famine, because of course one of the characteristics of the Irish people is to travel, is to be everywhere. Sometimes people say there are more Irish people in New York than in Dublin. It might be true. Certainly, Irish culture has been a very successful export. You can see here they are in Ireland, very hungry, praying to God, trying to understand how this is possible. You just stay with us. Thanks. And on the other side, these are the Irish people who have left for America. They have better clothes. They have more to eat. Yeah, it is the beginning of a solution, although of course an individual solution. After the famine, millions of Irish people left Ireland, and of course, like most immigrants, they dreamed of coming back home one day. Yeah, one day we will come back home. Often it's more complicated than that. First of all, often you don't have the money to go back home. And secondly, when you go back home 30 years later, home has changed so much that your home is no longer there. It's the traditional story of immigrants and emigrants. A million songs were written about Irish people leaving Ireland. And the most famous one is this one. Danny Boy. You can find it on YouTube. And the song is of a father saying to his son, who is leaving for America, yeah, goodbye, and when you come back, if I am dead, say a prayer for me. Yeah, it's sort of funny, sort of melodramatic and religious and Irish, really. Okay, yeah, very. My grandfather used to sing Danny Boy. Extremely. Hello, bonjour. Bug up. Okay. Si vous voulez faire pleurer un Irlandais, vous lui chantez cette chanson, ça marche à tous les coups. OK? I spoke about social and economic oppression, poverty and also underdevelopment. Donc, pas seulement la pauvreté, mais aussi le sous-développement. Il n'y a pas d'investissement, tout l'investissement, c'est pour le Nord, là où il y a les protestants. Second question, the question of politics. Absolute political domination from London. After 1800, Ireland did not have a parliament. They simply had some members of parliament in the Palace of Westminster, in the London Parliament. And in Dublin, there was a viceroy, a viceroy, a representative of the king, appointed by London, not chosen by the Irish people, but appointed from London. Nommé, appointed. Attention avec appointé, c'est vos amis, c'est nommé. And, of course, regularly, there were attempts, rebellions by Irish people who wanted independence, and they always lost. The troubles were severely crushed, écrasé, by the English administration. One of the most famous rebellions was in 1798, under the leadership of Wolfe Tone. Je crois que j'ai déjà évoqué Wolfe Tone. This is not Wolfe Tone, this is a statue of Wolfe Tone. Finally, the question of religious oppression. Until independence, the administration, the judges, the police, the army, and even for some time the members of parliament were all Protestants. So, in 1840, 1850, 1860, 1870, all the 19th century, the domination in Northern in Ireland of Protestants was massive. 90% of the judges were Protestants, and if you were arrested for something, you got a completely different treatment if you were Catholic and if you were a Protestant. So, discrimination based on your religion. With all the prejudices and racism, which is typical in these situations. Many of the Protestants really believed that they were civilized and that the Catholics were barbarians. Yeah. Remember, this is 19th century racism. It's even more brutal than 20th century racism. It's not sophisticated. It's we are people, they are animals. Yeah. No problem. Very unsophisticated. So, important religious oppression. The religious oppression will continue after independence, in Northern Ireland especially. So, that's the story of the War of Independence between 1919 and 1921. The British government realised it could not keep Ireland, and so we have partition. The northern counties of the island, 6 out of the 9 counties making up the province of Ulster, were kept within the United Kingdom because there a majority of the population was Protestant, of English of English or Scottish backgrounds. Northern Ireland was also richer than the rest of the country. It was the only province where there had been genuine industrialisation. The example, but it's a bad example, is in the Belfast shipyards they built the Titanic. It's not a good example, okay. They built many big ships, including the Titanic. The biggest ships in the world were built in Northern Ireland at this time. So the six counties. Now, when they decided to do this, to divide Ireland, they said it is temporary. It is a temporary solution. It is not permanent. Ireland will be united later. Okay? And from next week, we will look at what happens in the south of Ireland after 1921. But today, in the north of Ireland. In the north of Ireland, the large Catholic minority, 35% approximately, remained socially disadvantaged and politically underrepresented. In Northern Ireland, up to the 1970s, about 90% of the jobs in the administration, civil service, justice, and police were held by Protestants. So you had a situation where, in the Catholic part of town, if you had a problem, nobody would call the police because the police were all Protestants. They were really not interested. And organisations like the IRA, Liha, became the police for the Catholic parts of town. And if people had a problem, everyday problems, stealing, violence, etc., they would go and find the IRA, who would act as the police. So this is one of the ways in which the IRA gained support, because they were doing some of the things which you would normally expect the government to do. If you went for a job in a factory, well, many of the factories recruited their workers through the Orange Order. The Orange Order is an association, an organization of Protestants to defend Protestant culture. Fundamentally, it is an anti-Catholic organization. And in many factories, it was impossible to get a job if you were not a friend of the Orange Order. Yeah. Donc, on n'est pas tout à fait au niveau de l'apartheid en Afrique du Sud, hein. Mais n'empêche que c'est vraiment une discrimination extrêmement rigide où il y avait très peu de chances de s'en sortir autrement. Here you have Now, in the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1960s, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, who wanted Ireland to be united again and considered the English to be an enemy country, they had ups and downs. There were some bombing in 1939, some bombs in England by the IRA in 1939, just before the war. But in the 50s and 60s, the IRA was mostly old people, not very active, until everything changed in the 1960s. First of all, a group of Catholics decided that they wanted equal rights for Catholics. They looked to America, and in America they saw the civil rights movements asking for equal rights for blacks. And so they said, in America, they are making a lot of fuss and winning, sometimes very slowly, some equal rights. In Ireland, we want equal rights for Catholics here. For example, social housing, le logement social. It is very, very difficult to get social housing if you are a Catholic. We want equal rights for Catholics. And they established these civil rights organization, which was not a, it was not a Catholic organization. There were some Protestants in it as well. It was a non-sectarian organization. And they began to organize a series of demonstrations to demand equal rights, especially in voting, in social housing, etc. I should explain that the voting system discriminated against Catholics. They used a method called gerrymandering, G-E-2-R-Y, M-A-N-D-E-R-I-N-G. C'est un peu compliqué, alors je vais l'expliquer en français. Le gerrymandering, c'est dessiner les frontières des circonscriptions électorales pour être sûr que les catholiques sont sous-représentés. Essentiellement, si vous avez un bloc là, un quartier catholique, vous vous assurez que la moitié c'est dans une circonscription avec une majorité protestante et l'autre moitié aussi. Alors vous avez ce bloc de catholiques, ils ne gagnent aucune élection parce que tous les catholiques se retrouvent dans une circonscription où ils sont minoritaires. Ça c'est le gerrymandering, and it was very, very developed in Northern Ireland. So the local government was massively Protestant. That was one of the demands of the civil rights organization, Equal Rights. However, the Protestant police and the Protestant government were very hard against the demonstrations. And this conflict allowed the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, to begin to become active again. They recruited some new members because it did not seem easy to make things better by political means. So the IRA resumed bombings in the province and in Britain. And on the other side, there were some Protestant military organisations, Protestant paramilitary organisations involved. So you had a situation of a very low-level civil war. Ça fait un peu une guerre civile au ralenti. Yeah? Sur 30 ans, je ne sais pas s'il y a 10 000 morts, sur 30 ans. So it's a very low level, very slow civil war. Here is a mural of a Protestant paramilitary organization. Yeah, there are the guns. And there is the symbol of the Ulster Freedom Fighters, the Ulster Freedom Fighters. This is a Protestant organization against equal rights for Catholics. There is something interesting about this. It is a mural. It is painted on the side of a house. And that is important because both the IRA and the UFF had a lot of support in their community. They were not tiny minorities hiding away in a pub. Yeah? They had a lot of support. They could paint on the houses. Here we are, we have guns and we don't like Catholics. Let's paint it on our houses. Yeah? It was a popular organization. Formed in 1973. Yes, 1973, the 70s. Here is a Catholic nationalist mural. When the Protestant police became harder and harder on Catholic civil rights people, in the Catholic part of town, the police would arrive and come into the houses and break everything and take the men away. And so the Catholics organized themselves to stop the police coming in. And for a while, in the Catholic part of Derry, the police did not go in. It was not easy for them to go in. And this is, you and I drink free Derry. On say, ici dans notre quartier, on est libre, la police n'ose pas entrer. Yes? Again, it is painted in big letters. This is a big conflict. This mural has been there for 30 years. The police cannot take it down, yeah, because they have no support. Even the police, they need some support in the community to act. You're now entering Free Derry. In 1969, the situation got worse. There were riots, there were attacks on the Catholic part of town by Protestant gangs. And the British government decided to send the British soldiers, the British army, to Northern Ireland. In theory, the objective of the British army was to stop the Catholics and the Protestants from fighting each other. And in the first few days, the Catholics were happy to see the soldiers. Because before the soldiers came, the Catholic part of town was barricaded to protect them against the Protestant police, who were very violent. And the Catholics thought, the British army is not like the Irish Protestants, really hating Catholics, so they will protect us. For a few weeks this was true, but afterwards it became clear that the British army defended the Protestant police and did not defend the Catholics. So the British army became very unpopular in Ireland. The British army stayed, again, when the British army was sent to Northern Ireland, in theory it was temporary. In practice they stayed for 25 years. Okay, this is, when you send armies, it's always very difficult to keep it temporary. They also established what we call internment, c'est l'emprisonnement sans procès. They declared a state of emergency. The government said it's an emergency situation, so because the society is so divided, we cannot arrest people and have a trial, un procès. So they just had internments. Tous ceux qui étaient soupçonnés d'être liés à l'IRA étaient emprisonnés sans procès. And of course, that was very hard for people. The biggest event was in 1972, which was Bloody Sunday. Now, Bloody Sunday is very interesting. There was a film about it. I recommend the film. There was a demonstration for civil rights, and after the demonstration, in the Catholic part of town, the army came and they shot, I think, 12 people. The next day, the newspapers said the soldiers were obliged to defend themselves. The government established an inquiry, and 2 weeks later, the inquiry said the soldiers were right, it was self-defense. The problem was, these people were not shot in a place where they were hidden. They were shot in front of their own houses, in the big blocks of flats, and hundreds of people saw it. All the balconies of the flats, hundreds of people saw the army shoot young men who had no guns, peaceful people, just shot in front of their own homes. And then the newspaper said it didn't happen, it was self-defense. After Bloody Sunday, it was extremely easy for the IRA to recruit. It was extremely easy. Because the IRA said, there is no political solution. You must join us. We need to fight the British. Because these people, they had seen their brothers and their cousins shot in front of their own homes with hundreds of people watching. And the government said it was okay. Yeah. So let's say that confidence in democracy was zero. And the IRA recruited 1,000 people in a month. It was not difficult at all. And that was the beginning. And for 10, 12 years, there was a much more violent situation. The IRA put bombs in pubs in Manchester and Birmingham, pubs which soldiers go to. Yeah, they chose the favourite pubs of the British soldiers and they exploded them and killed people, and they also killed innocent civilians who were working in the pubs. And Irish people in Britain were often hated because they said, oh, you're Irish, you must support the IRA. So a very, very hot, very, very difficult situation. The government inquiry in 1972 said that the killings were justified. The House of Commons had a debate in 1972 and said the killings were justified, the soldiers were right. The House of Lords had a debate, they said no problem. And 15 years later, 16 years later, 26 years later, 26 years later, there was a second inquiry. And 2 months ago, il y a 2 mois, il y avait un nouveau rapport, and the Prime Minister of England officially apologised for Bloody Sunday, and the Prime Minister of England, the Conservative Prime Minister of England today, said that all of these men were innocent, none of these men were carrying guns. So today the situation has changed. The British government recognises that, officially, that it was just terrible. But of course, at the time, this just made the whole situation explode. This is a demonstration in 2010, this year, just before the publication of the new reports on Bloody Sunday. And here are the faces of two of the victims of Bloody Sunday in 1972. Attention, si vous cherchez sur l'internet, il y a beaucoup d'événements différents dans l'histoire qui ont pris le nom de Dimanche Sanglant. Celui-là, c'est celui de 72. This is what the Prime Minister said in the House of Commons. Just stay with us, will you? Thank you. Thank you. The Conservative Prime Minister, the conclusions of this report are absolutely clear. There is no doubt, there is nothing equivocal, there are no ambiguities. What happened on Bloody Sunday was both unjustified and unjustifiable. It was wrong. Some members of our armed forces acted wrongly. The government is ultimately responsible for the conduct of our armed forces, and for that, on behalf of the government, and indeed our country, I am deeply sorry. This was extremely important to the families of the victims who have been campaigning for 25 years. Now, there may be, next year, trials of soldiers for murder, connected with Bloody Sunday. There's the film. And on the right, you have a mural about Bloody Sunday. Of course, there is also the song, yes. The next big event in the Troubles in Northern Ireland is the hunger strike of 1981. Members of the IRA, or people who were suspected of being members of the IRA, were in prison. Often they hadn't had a trial. For a long time, the British government said, okay, you're in prison, but we recognise that you are different from the criminals because you haven't had a trial. So, for example, you can wear your own clothes, you can meet each other to discuss politics, you can receive newspapers. And in the early 1980s, the government said, this is finished. You must wear the same uniform as the criminals. You must do prison work. You must be the same as the criminals. And the IRA people said, no, we refuse to wear prison uniform. We are not criminals. We are soldiers. We refuse to wear uniforms. And so the prison authorities said, if you do not wear uniforms, we will not give you clothes. And so for 3 years, they had no clothes, just the blankets from their bed. Yeah. And then the prison authorities said, if you do not wear clothes, you cannot go to the toilet. And so for a year, the prisoners did not go to the toilet. Yeah, they just used just in their cell and dried the shit on the walls. So it was a political protest to send the message. What they wanted to do was to send the message, we are not criminals. However difficult it is, we refuse to wear the uniforms of criminals. You see this very clearly in the... there's another film came out last year, Hunger. Il y a un film pas très très bon qui est sorti l'année dernière, Hunger. C'est pas très très bon, mais quand même ça explique certaines choses. And finally, so after the blanket protest and the dirty protest, the final possibility was they decided to have a hunger strike, une grève de la faim. And the Prime Minister of England, Margaret Thatcher, said, "These are criminals, they have no support. It's not my problem if they have a hunger strike." And one of the hunger strikers, Bobby Sands, stood for election. While he was on hunger strike, there was an election, une élection partielle, and he won, and so he was elected Member of Parliament. And when he died, he was elected Member of Parliament. Now, of course, the reason to be elected Member of Parliament is political. When he was elected Member of Parliament, it was on the front page of every newspaper in the world. Yeah? It was a big start. 10 hunger strikers died before the hunger strike was called off. And here is a mural again. The murals are a traditional means of expression for different sides in the Northern Ireland conflict. Here is a mural of Bobby Sands, the hunger striker, the first hunger striker to die. And he has his slogan at the sides: "Our revenge will be the laughter of our children." Notre vengeance sera le rire de nos enfants. That's a Bobby Sands quotation. Voilà les vrais chiffres, je les avais plus en tête. During the 30 years of the Troubles, more than 3,600 people died and 38,000 were injured. Of course, this is a lot of people, but it's not like a major war. In Vietnam, 1.5 million people died, yeah? Okay? So, but it's this kind of very bizarre situation, a very, very, very slow civil war. 38,000 injured. The situation today is that there are 1.6 million people in Northern Ireland and only 53% are Protestant now. My family are Catholics, and we always say, we Catholics have a secret weapon: we have a lot of children. Okay, so the proportion has risen little by little. Now, I want to move, so that was the worst situation, the 1970s, a lot of bombings, yeah, the IRA killed a lot of people, the British Army killed a lot of people, the 1980s, the hunger strike. Today, the situation is much better. And I want to look at two things. First of all, what is different today? And secondly, much more difficult, why? I don't really know why, but I will try to suggest. When you're studying history, why is the only really interesting question. Protestant mural. "This we will maintain." "Ceci nous maintiendrons" is a slogan of the unionists. Je ne devrais pas dire protestant parce qu'il y a des protestants qui ne sont pas unionistes. Remember the difference, yeah? The two religions, Catholic and Protestant, the two political positions: nationalists for the unity of Ireland, unionists for the unity of Northern Ireland with England. And there is a minority of Protestants who are in favour of the unity of Ireland. So it's not a religious question, it's a political question. Even today, however, the big towns are very divided. There is the Catholic part of town and the Protestant part of town, in Derry, in Belfast, and so on. Ça me rappelle un peu le sud des États-Unis. Quand je suis allé, j'ai une amie londonienne qui est allée vivre dans le Tennessee. Et elle discutait avant, et disait, oui, non, mais bon, moi, j'ai pas envie de vivre dans un quartier blanc, hein, la moitié de la population est noire là-bas. Je vais vivre dans un quartier mixte. Très bonne idée, il n'y en a pas. Hein? À Nashville, il n'y en a pas. Il y a le quartier noir, le quartier blanc, c'est tout. Hein? So it's a very, very difficult situation. And it's like that with Catholics in Northern Ireland, the Catholic part of town, the Protestant part of town. Even today in Belfast, there are parts of town where Catholics cannot go. It's dangerous to go. And inter-community marriages represent only 15% of all marriages. C'est 15% de tous les mariages sont mixtes, donc protestants, catholiques. Ce qui est beaucoup moins qu'à la fin du 19e siècle, en fait. Donc, ce n'est pas la tradition le problème, c'est la guerre. Okay, so finally the peace process then. I am simplifying the story because it's a complicated story. In the 1980s, a series of initiatives, but not a lot of success. But in the after 1997, with the new Labour government, things got better. For two reasons, in my opinion. First reason, there was a change of generation. The people who had seen Bloody Sunday were now old, and the younger people, they were still very angry about Bloody Sunday, but they had more flexibility. What can we do differently? Secondly, very important, the economic situation from after 1997 for 10 years was much better. Unemployment was down. Not today, but 5 years ago. Unemployment was down a lot. It fell an awful lot. Young people in Ireland were not so desperate. The situation was better. In 1997, the Irish Republican Army announced a ceasefire. Donc, ils ont annoncé un cessez-le-feu en 97. Fundamentally, the situation was, of course, from a military point of view, the IRA could not win against the British Army, which has a million times more money and better arms. However, the British Army, from a military point of view, could not defeat the IRA because the IRA had a lot of support in the community because of all the discrimination and so on. So from a military point of view, it was impossible. So you had the talks, negotiations from 97, including the nationalist parties, Sinn Féin, who want a united Ireland, the unionist parties that want Northern Ireland to remain within the United Kingdom, and the British and Irish governments. They found an agreement in 1998, the Good Friday Peace Agreement. And this has reduced the violence a lot. However, the question of a united Ireland or not has not been solved. So it is possible that the situation could get worse again. There they are, signing the Good Friday Agreement. What did the agreement say? First of all, it said that Northern Ireland should have an autonomous parliament like Scotland and Wales. And secondly, very important, Dublin, so the government of the south, would be encouraged to cooperate on some important questions: agriculture, fishing, tourism, the environment, transport. Now, this is important symbolically, because the Catholics in Northern Ireland say, oh, at least we feel like we are Irish, one country. There was some attempt to reduce discrimination against Catholics. It was not easy. For 100 years almost, there had been discrimination against Catholics. Even today it is illegal. If you want to employ somebody for a job, it is illegal to say, are you a Catholic or a Protestant? That is illegal. But if I say, what school did you go to? That's legal. I went to the Virgin Mary School. Okay, yeah. It's not difficult to know who is Catholic. Secondly, the paramilitary groups, the IRA and the Ulster Freedom Fighters, would decommission their weapons. Ils allaient détruire leurs armes. Donc notez bien, on ne demandait pas de les donner à la police, il ne faut pas exagérer. On le demandait de les détruire. And the way they did this is that they invited religious people. They invited an Anglican priest, a Protestant priest, and a Catholic priest to come and watch the weapons being destroyed. And this was the method. And finally, the political prisoners were freed. Hundreds and hundreds of prisoners were liberated. This is a monument to the prisoners who were freed from the H block. La prison H, on appelait ça parce que c'est de la forme des bâtiments. And this was the terrible prison where the hunger strikers died. Okay, that's all for today. Thank you for listening.